Welcome to Healthy Vision. I'm your host, Dr. Val Jones. This show is brought to you by AccuView, the brand of contact lenses most trusted by eye doctors. Across the country, millions of children are either back in school or getting ready to start the fall semester. But did you know that about 1 in 4 school-aged children suffer from an undetected or untreated vision problem? On today's show, we have the privilege of speaking with Dr. Dori Carlson, president of the American Optometric Association, about how the AOA and numerous other organizations and associations are working together to make children's vision a top public health priority. Also on today's show, has your child asked you about wearing contact lenses? Is there a right age for children to start wearing contacts? Optometrist and researcher Dr. Jeffrey Willeen and clinical psychology professor Mitchell Prinstein join us to talk about how to know if your child is ready for contacts and to share new research results that suggest that contact lenses may have added benefits to your child beyond vision correction. And what has the switch to contacts meant for actress Meghan Martin? The All-American actress joins us today to talk about the impact of vision correction on her personal and professional lives. Responding to President Obama's call to ensure that no child is left behind in the classroom due to an undetected or untreated eye or vision disorder, the American Optometric Association recently gathered together doctors, nurses, educators, and other children's health advocates for the first ever School Readiness Summit, Focus on Vision. The two-day session examined the alarmingly high rates of learning-related vision issues now affecting America's children. And at the conclusion of the summit, the group issued a statement urging a sustained and committed interdisciplinary approach to eliminating untreated and undiagnosed vision problems from America's schools. Dr. Dori Carlson, president of the American Optometric Association, joins us today from North Dakota to talk about the summit and efforts underway to address children's vision and eye health issues. Dr. Carlson, I was really surprised to learn that 1 in 4 school-aged children suffer from an undetected vision problem. What's causing these vision problems?
Well, vision problems are a natural development of what happens as a child develops. And so the issue here is just the fact that they're not being caught. And I think first to kind of answer that question a little bit is you have to kind of understand what happens when a child's born. When a child's born, they're born extremely farsighted, and everything's really blurry for them. And it's not until about maybe around 6, 7, 8 months of age that the 20/20 vision, as we know it, kind of starts to kick in because their vision is developing as they're growing and they're developing. So about that time is when you start to see a lot of the developmental changes start to happen with kids, and they gradually lose that farsightedness as they go. And if they don't lose that farsightedness as quickly as they should or on a timely basis, or if they don't lose it in equal amounts so that one eye loses it faster than the other or something of that nature, that's where some of these vision problems start to crop up and you start to see some of these changes happen. And what's happening is that kids aren't necessarily always getting checked before they start school, so at that point in time when they're in that entry-level school age group, then suddenly we're finding that 1 in 4 kids really do have some sort of undetected vision problem that could have been detected earlier.
So why aren't we detecting them earlier? Why aren't we getting them checked out before school starts?
Part of it is that parents don't realize that they should get their kids' eyes checked. It's not that they're bad parents or anything, but it's just sometimes we just assume as human nature that, well, if there's a vision problem, we'll notice it because we'll see that our child's bumping into something or some other problem like that. I've seen it happen time and time again where parents didn't realize there was a problem. Let's take an example. We've heard maybe the term lazy eye. And what it basically refers to is there's a couple of different ways that a child can develop what's amblyopia or a lazy eye. And one is that there can be physically one eye turning in or out independently of the other eye. So they're not working together and they're not teaming together. That's easy to see because you can look at the child and go, you know, something's not right here. But the second thing that's a lot harder to catch is that the eyes may physically be teaming well together and the muscle system is working, but as the vision was developing and as the child was losing that farsightedness, one eye lost the farsightedness at a faster pace than the other eye did. So the brain got used to seeing better with one eye while the image was more blurry with the other eye, and as a result, the brain just kind of started turning off the vision from one of the eyes, and that's how a person ended up with a lazy eye. That's really hard to detect. There's all kinds of stories where somebody didn't realize there was a problem until one eye got covered, and they were at some place where suddenly somebody realized that when they covered an eye, they couldn't see.
And sometimes balance problems can be confused with vision problems, can't they?
Yes, they can. And, you know, I guess balance problems can be confused, yes, because that's if it's a true balance problem, that would be like an inner ear problem. But, you know, it also goes with the sensory with vision. I had a patient many years ago who I believe is about 6 years old at the time, came in for an eye exam, and his mom brought him in and kind of said that she thought there was something wrong with his hearing because she would tell him to pick something up, and he didn't always, like, pay attention to her. And so she kind of thought that maybe there was a hearing issue or whatever. So I ended up doing the eye exam on this little boy, and what had happened was one eye could see very clearly, but one eye was extremely nearsighted. He could see something really clearly, maybe 6-7 inches from his face, and that was it. Everything else was really blurry. So things were clear with one eye and really blurry with the other eye. And what I did is I fit him with one contact lens so that he had a contact lens on that one eye so he could actually see well with both eyes again. And his mom came back in. I had him back in for a follow-up visit, and his mom came in and said, you know, he learned how to ride his bike, but he couldn't ride it after we'd fit him with the contact lens because his balance was off, and he had to relearn how to ride his bicycle. And kind of after the fact, she had realized, too, that it was his left eye that didn't see well with. Well, to make left-hand turns, he was making complete circles to the right, and he'd go all the way around to the right in order to wait to get back over to the left. And so, like I said, it wasn't until after that we fit him with the contact lens and he was actually seeing well that his mom kind of figured out that there were some changes here that they really, really hadn't noticed.
That is so interesting. Now, you mentioned that the contact lens in that particular case was really helpful in the treatment of that child. Are there other treatments that you frequently use for vision problems in children?
It depends upon what the needs are for the patient. It might be as simple as a pair of glasses that makes a difference for the child. In this particular case, because there was such a difference between the two eyes, a pair of glasses just was really difficult to work with because there was such a huge difference. So a contact lens was an easier thing to work with for this particular little boy. You know, it might be something where if that child has developed a lazy eye, there may be patching therapy prescribed so that you patch the better eye of the two and with activities and things encourage the brain to kind of turn on the information with the eye that has been not seeing so well. Or, you know, there's something that can be done with vision therapy, for instance, and that's a really common thing that's done for if the two eyes aren't teaming well together or if you have one eye, like I said before, that's turning in or out independently of the other, they can work with exercises to kind of help the visual system and the two eyes team back together again. So it really depends upon what the child's needs are.
I understand that while most school vision screenings can and do catch some types of vision problems, they do have their limitations. Are you concerned about parents who rely specifically on school screenings for their vision care?
I really am, because the studies show that upwards of 75% of the kids who have a learning-related vision problem are actually missed on a school screening. And, you know, the other thing that concerns me, too, is that even if a child is found to have a problem on a school screening, there's other studies that show that upwards of 40% of the kids don't get the follow-up care afterwards. And that might be for a variety of reasons. It could be that maybe a piece of paper got stuck in the backpack and didn't get home to the parents, so they didn't know that their child was found to have a problem with the school screening. Even in the best screenings where they do catch kids, sometimes there's a problem with the follow-up care afterwards and making sure that kids are seen to have it checked out.
And what are some of the more common vision problems that you see in children, and what could happen to them if they're not detected early?
Well, the biggest thing that I see, and the younger the child is, certainly the most common it is, most kids are going to be farsighted to some degree. Lots of studies have been done, and usually about the 4, 5, and 6-year-old range is where we want them to be still a little bit farsighted before they enter school. And so I will look at kids to see if they're within those normal ranges for what their age group is. You'll see kids that are farsighted and are having trouble seeing, and if they're too farsighted, they'll have trouble seeing things up close. Certainly, you'll start to see kids that are nearsighted and are having trouble seeing the blackboard. I see kids who have one eye seeing better than the other, and there's issues with a lazy eye type of issue, or amblyopia as it's called. And those are probably the most common things that happen with kids.
And if they're not detected early, does their vision suffer long term?
It can, yes. Certainly the older a child is before you get any sort of vision problems detected, the more difficult it is to deal with the problem, in particular if they're farsighted.
And I bet this has a relationship to do with their learning, doesn't it?
Absolutely. You know, you can see different things. Over the years, I've had several kids that have been diagnosed with attention deficit disorder, for example. And it wasn't until later that someone said, well, maybe we should get their eyes checked and find out that the child was so farsighted that they couldn't really attend to anything that was put up in front of them anyway, up close. So, you know, I've had kids that have been put on medications to treat their disorders and things when, you know, maybe there was an aspect there, but certainly there was a visual component that was attributing to some of the problem.
Now, you attended the School Readiness Summit recently. What were your takeaways?
The School Readiness Summit was fabulous. It was a summit about getting a diversified group of individuals together, people from all kinds of groups that work with children, Parent Teachers Association, Head Start Association, National Commission on Vision and Health, Speech and Learning, and getting all of these different groups from these different associations who were not eye doctors and in the same room discussing about how vision is related with learning and that in order to learn well, you have to see well. And that's what the whole impetus behind the School Readiness Summit was. So we spent a day and a half talking about all the issues about how vision and learning were related and what could we do as a group to raise the level of awareness that somewhere in the foundation of children's care is that there should be an eye exam to make sure that they have every possibility of performing well when they get into school.
At the summit, mother and author Robin Benoit told the group how she unexpectedly discovered that her daughter Jillian had a significant vision problem. Let's take a listen.
Jillian is one of those children who fell through the cracks. And we don't really know how that happened, because Jillian was screened by her pediatrician at more than one annual physical. It wasn't until she was five, almost 6 years old, at the end of preschool, they were pretending to be pirates. And the teacher slipped a pirate patch on my daughter's good eye, leaving her blind. And my daughter fell to the floor screaming for help. And that is not how a parent should find out that their child is blind in one eye.
Dr. Carlson, you're not only a family eye doctor and the president of the American Optometric Association, but you're also a mom. What can moms learn from Robin's story?
With Robin's story, I think it was just a really horrible way to find out that your daughter has trouble seeing in one eye. And certainly I think the takeaway from this is that we need to make sure that our kids have an eye exam at some point in time in those developmental years. As the American Optometric Association president, what we recommend is that a child have their eye exam in the first year of life, specifically about the ages 6 to 12 months or somewhere in that age, at 3 years of age and before they enter school. That way you can catch any and all developmental vision problems that might be occurring, or at least identifying the kids at risk, and find out what's going on with your child before you run into a problem like what happened to Robin.
Dr. Carlson, I know that the AOA Foundation supports the Infancy Program. I wondered if you could tell our listeners a little bit more about it.
Absolutely. The Infancy Program started about 5 years ago, where the American Optometric Association challenged all of us as providers to see if there was something we could do to make a difference in the lives of children. We believed so strongly that we needed to change how we were looking at children's vision issues and, more importantly, raise the level of awareness that Infancy was developed. What it is Infancy is a program where providers, specifically optometrists all across the United States, donate their time and provide no-cost eye assessments to children in their first year of life.
So how do you find an Infancy provider?
You can find an Infancy provider by going to the American Optometric Association's website. It is AOA.org. There is a doctor locator on that website, and you can search it by zip code or state or find somebody in your area that may be an Infancy provider.
Thanks so much for joining me today, Dr. Carlson.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Infancy is a public health program that provides a one-time comprehensive eye assessment to infants in their first year of life, typically between the ages of 6 and 12 months. These assessments are provided at no cost to all families, regardless of ability to pay or access to insurance coverage. For more information, visit www.infancy.org. That's www.infancy.org. Coming up next, are contact lenses right for your child? Two leading experts offer advice on how to know if your child is ready for contacts. You're listening to Healthy Vision with Dr. Val Jones, brought to you by AccuView, the brand of contact lenses most trusted by eye doctors. For some children, contact lenses have become a popular and comfortable alternative to glasses, and a growing body of research suggests that contacts provide significant benefits to children beyond just correcting their vision. However, some parents aren't sure if contacts are a viable option for their child. So how do you know if your child is ready to wear and care for contacts? And what does the research say about how children feel about wearing contacts compared to glasses? Joining me today to help answer these questions, optometrist and researcher Dr. Jeffrey Wallin. Dr. Wallin is an assistant professor at The Ohio State University College of Optometry and the principal investigator of the Adolescent and Child Health Initiative to Encourage Vision Empowerment, or ACHIEVE study, a randomized clinical trial that investigated the effects of contact lens wear on nearsighted children's self-perception. And also on the line, Dr. Mitchell Prinstein, professor and director of clinical psychology at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. He currently serves as an associate editor for the Journal of Consulting and Clinical Psychology and was a co-author on the ACHIEVE study. Dr. Wallin, you know, the ACHIEVE study is a pretty rigorous study. I mean, it lasted for 3 years, and you took a look at kids who were either wearing glasses or contact lenses for that period of time. Can you tell us a little bit more about the study and what you found?
We actually enrolled 484 children across the United States in a study, and then we randomly assigned half of them to wear contact lenses and half of them to wear glasses for 3 years. And we measured their self-esteem throughout the entire study. Our hypothesis was that their global self-worth, or how they feel about themselves, would improve if they were fit with contact lenses. However, we found that their global self-worth didn't change if they were fit with contact lenses, but specific areas of their self-worth or self-esteem did improve.
So what areas showed improvement?
The areas where they actually did improve were in athletic competence, peer interactions, and also attractiveness. So they felt better about the way they were able to participate in sports, about how they looked, and I think it's sort of those two that drive their improved peer interactions. And then interestingly, they actually felt better about their academic abilities if they initially did not like wearing glasses. And the reason we think that that might be true is because a lot of times if kids don't like wearing glasses, they just don't. If they're not wearing their glasses in school, they can't see the board, they can't see what's going on, so they might struggle a little bit. When you put on contact lenses, they'll wear them all day long, be able to see clearly, and feel like they do better in school.
Dr. Prinstein, were you surprised that something as simple as switching from glasses to contacts had such a positive effect on children's self-esteem?
Actually, I was very surprised. As a psychologist, I'm used to helping kids' self-esteem by talking with their parents and their teachers and changing their school context or their peer experiences. And it turns out you can see pretty nice effects on improving kids' self-esteem with something very simple and relatively cheap, and that was the switch from glasses to contacts.
And in comparison with other attempts to help kids with their self-esteem, how did the switch from glasses to contacts fare?
Well, some of the other attempts are things that involve activities that the teacher is involved in, that the parents are involved in, maybe even individual work with kids themselves. And those kinds of large-scale interventions, in some cases, produced effects that were pretty similar to what you saw with the switch to contact lenses. It seemed to make a big difference. This is something that is obvious to kids and to kids' peers in their environment all the time. So a simple change like that affects virtually every interaction they have.
Dr. Wallin, I have to say that when I was a kid, glasses were not considered to be very cool. These days, how do kids feel about wearing glasses?
Well, I think that kids just seem to not like the way that they look in glasses. We hear all the time where kids are called four eyes. We don't seem to see that quite as much as we used to because glasses are becoming more of a fashion statement. We call it the Harry Potter effect, where kids actually don't think that they look as bad in glasses because more people are wearing them. However, even though there is sort of improved perceptions with glasses, many kids really don't like the way that they look in them. So if they can wear contact lenses, they just feel better about their overall appearance and think that their friends view them similarly.
Well, when I was a kid, I wore glasses, and I know that I wanted contact lenses, but I went to the eye doctor, and he said I was too young. And I always thought that was such a shame because I really wanted to get them. My glasses are a strong prescription, and I just think today maybe things are a little different. Do you think that's true?
Oh, I definitely think that's true. We hear that story all the time. People who come into our studies say they asked their doctor about contact lenses, and their doctor said, how about we wait till a little bit later time? But now we have contact lenses that kids can just throw away at the end of the day, put in a new fresh pair the next day, and they really don't have to do anything to care for the contact lenses except for put them in and take them out of their eyes every day. So I think that makes it much easier for parents to sort of understand and realize that kids can take care of their contact lenses. And so I think now we're starting to see kids wear contact lenses at earlier ages.
Some parents are worried that talking to their children about their glasses might make them self-conscious about them. Is that true?
You know, a lot of parents do have that very understandable concern that raising a topic that might be difficult or taboo or might raise kids' concerns might be bad. And actually, that's not true. It's perfectly appropriate to talk with kids that they might be feeling a little bit sensitive about. Often kids feel good that someone is noticing and someone's caring about the things that matters to them the most. So it's perfectly appropriate to talk with kids about something like how they feel about their glasses or if they're interested in contacts. And kids usually are very interested in having that discussion with their parents.
So if you were a mom about to talk to your child about their glasses, do you have any tips, some helpful insights into where the child's head might be at in terms of their developmental stages?
I think it's always a good idea to ask kids some questions that are pretty open-ended. Asking kids, for instance, how do you feel about wearing your glasses? How would you feel about wearing contact lenses? What do you see as the benefits or what might be some of the negatives of glasses? These kinds of open-ended questions let kids feel that they're not going to be judged, that any answer is an appropriate answer, and that it's not kind of a leading question. And those kinds of things can help kids to feel rather open and expressive and talk about things that they might feel are hard topics to talk about.
That's really interesting. Just as a general guideline, is there a certain age when it's appropriate to let a child start wearing contact lenses?
I generally tell people that we should not base a child's ability to wear contact lenses on age alone. When I'm talking to the parents, I generally say, think about the child and their ability to follow directions. And if they can appropriately follow directions, then I think they're a good candidate. When I talk to doctors, I always say, think of the three M's, the maturity, the motivation, and the mother. So what I mean by that is a mature child is actually easier to fit with contact lenses, and they're more likely to be able to care for their contact lenses. If the child's motivated, they are certainly easier to fit with contact lenses because it's just easier for them to learn to put the contact lenses in and take them out. And the last one is the mother. You want a mother who is caring but not overbearing. So what I mean by that is you want a mother who will remind a child to insert and remove the contact lenses, but you don't want a mother who will do it for the child because the child will never learn to take care of contact lenses by himself or herself.
And is there a difference in competency with younger kids in terms of caring for their contacts, do you think?
I think that young kids can do a very good job taking care of their contacts, especially these days. There are contacts that don't require overnight care, so they can just throw them away at the end of the night. But it provides a nice teaching moment and an opportunity for kids to learn how to be responsible with something that's very important to them.
I wonder if you have a little checklist or something that moms should run through in their mind on a daily basis to make sure that their kids are wearing their contacts safely?
I really think that if they're the ones that they throw away every day, they just need to make sure that the child takes them out when they go to bed. And with children, routine is so important that if they just make that part of their bedtime routine, then children are actually very good about taking out their contact lenses. When it becomes difficult is when the child is out of routine. So if the child stays overnight at a friend's house or they're out camping, something like that, then the parent really needs to make sure that they remind the child to take out the contact lenses or tell the friend's parent to remind the child to take out the contact lenses. Other than that, there's not much else that parents need to do to help children care for them.
What about hand hygiene?
Oh, that's a really good point. I think children are actually really good at public health messages. And so if we tell them to never touch contact lenses without washing their hands first, they actually follow those rules pretty well. And so over time, they might need reminders to do that. But in general, children are actually better than adults probably at these public health reminders. And I think as long as we remind them, the doctor should remind them every 6 months when they come back to the eye doctor for a regular checkup, and the parent should remind them on a slightly more regular basis. Make sure you wash your hands, make sure you remove your contact lenses, and I think children will do very well.
I want to thank you both for sharing your time and expertise with me today. To help parents better understand options and benefits for fitting children in contacts, Healthy Women, the leading independent health information source for women, offers a free educational resource, Fast Facts for Your Health, Contact Lenses for Children. You can read or download this helpful fact sheet at www.healthywomen.org/children-and-contacts. Coming up next, what did the switch to contacts mean for actress Megan Martin? Stay tuned. You're listening to Healthy Vision with Dr. Val Jones, brought to you by AccuView, the brand of contact lenses most trusted by eye doctors. Best known for her roles in Camp Rock, The Final Jam, and 10 Things I Hate About You, all-American actress Megan Martin is continuing to rise in her career. Having confidence in herself has been crucial in helping Megan become a successful actress, and she joins us today to talk about how believing in yourself combined with passion gives you the tools to succeed. Welcome to the show, Megan. When you started wearing contacts in the seventh grade, what made you switch from glasses?
I was a competitive dancer, and it was very difficult to dance with glasses. You can't really do any of the tricks. You know, you're worried your glasses are going to fall off your face or they're getting in the way. And also when you're on stage, you know, the lenses are reflecting the lights and you're hurting your eyes and the audience's eyes, and none of it is working out well. It's just kind of a whole big mess. So my mom suggested that I go to the eye doctor and get fitted for contact lenses. And it was a great suggestion. Mom always knows best. And it worked out really well, and now I am a daily contact lens wearer.
Megan, I've heard that some people, when they first try contact lenses, they have something we call pokophobia, which is fear of poking yourself in the eye. And I wonder if you had pokophobia when you first started wearing contact lenses.
I definitely did have pokophobia. That's kind of fun to say. I think I'm just going to walk around saying pokophobia. It was very scary for me, and just wearing something in my, like, the thought of having something on my eye all day long, that scared me too. But I mean, I knew that obviously it couldn't be super uncomfortable or unsafe or anything, or else everybody wouldn't be doing it. You know, they wouldn't be allowed to do it. So I had faith in my doctor, and I unfortunately had to have my mom put them in for me because I couldn't do it. It was just too odd for me. I couldn't bring my finger that close to my eye. and eventually my mom was out. She was out of town, and I was meeting up with some friends, and actually a boy that I liked. And I really wanted to wear my contact lenses because I think he had only seen me in glasses at that point in time. And I had to do it myself because my mom was not home. So I had to learn how to do it, and I did. I was successful. And after that moment, I was able to do it myself from then on. So it was a good hurdle to get over.
Wow. Well, for you, it was interest in a boy that got you through that hurdle. I wonder if you have any tips for people other than finding a boy that you like who are just starting out with contacts?
I think that the best thing is to just
give yourself time. There's no, you know, there's no pressure. You don't need to do it immediately, like, by yourself. Have someone help you. I was looking up online tutorials, which helped me a lot. They suggested, like, the fingers you could use, and because not everybody uses the same fingers to put the contacts on, and there's all sorts of help online if you Google it. And that the day that I put them in, that's what I was doing. I was looking everything up.
That's great. You know, Megan, I confessed in an earlier segment that even though I'm a doctor, I'm not always compliant with the wear and care suggestions of my eye doctor. And I thought you might want to confess something to our listeners as well, because I have a feeling that you also struggle.
Yes, I am sometimes not so great about my contact lens hygiene. It can be hard to remember to, you know, change the solution and clean out the case. And I always struggle with remembering if it's time for a new pair of lenses. And the minute, you know, it starts getting blurry, you realize that it's probably been longer than you should have had them in. But, you know, that's something that I really have to, like, set reminders on my phone for me to remember to do everything. But I'm getting better at it. It definitely takes time getting used to, and I'm getting better at it.
Well, I have to say, I did do the same thing and not switch my contacts as frequently. And I found that there are kind of two things that you can do about it. There's Acuminder.com, which is a reminder service, and it'll actually send you a text when it's time to change your contacts.
So neat. I'm signing up right now.
There you go. Surprise. And that helped me. And then the other thing that you can do, which I've ended up doing, is just wear daily disposables, because then, you know, you don't have to have the case and the cleaning and the, you know, you just take them out at night and just throw them away.
Perfect.
Megan, you were part of the AccuView One Day contest where you recently mentored a teenager. Tell me about that.
Yes, I was lucky enough to mentor Sean. He is such a wonderful person. He just has a great vibe to him. He's very happy, very positive, very excited, and he is an aspiring fashion designer. So getting to work with him was exciting for me, too, because he was teaching me stuff that I have no clue about, you know, the geometry of clothes making. And he came down from Canada to Los Angeles for the contest, and just surprising him all day long, helping him pursue his dream of being a fashion designer, starting with fitting him for contact lenses, which I know he was excited about, and going through all the daily steps that a fashion designer would go through, you know, working on creating a dress for me to wear was just so thrilling for him and for me, and to watch his face light up every time a new surprise revealed was priceless.
Megan, I wonder if you have any tips for teenagers to help them with their self-esteem.
I think that the best thing you can do for your self-esteem is find something that you enjoy doing, a hobby, it could be an academic class, whatever it is, something that you love doing, and hone in on it, you know, get good at it, practice it, enjoy it, and spend your time doing it, and that's the best way to feel good about yourself, is when you do something that you love to do and you're good at it.
Well, you're good at interviews, and I'm glad that you talked to me today. Thanks so much for joining the call.
Thank you.
Contact lens wearers, just want to remind you to go to Acuminder.com and sign up to receive an automatic reminder on when to change your contact lenses, when to buy new contacts, and when to schedule an eye exam. I've already signed up, and it's terrific. You've been listening to Healthy Vision with Dr. Val Jones, brought to you by AccuView, the brand of contact lenses most trusted by eye doctors.
Healthy Vision with Dr. Val Jones is a copyright of Johnson & Johnson Vision Care Incorporated, 2011. Dr. Jones is a paid consultant for Johnson & Johnson Vision Care Incorporated. As with all contact lenses, a prescription is required. Rare but serious eye problems can develop. Ask your eye doctor about proper wear and care and whether contact lenses are right for you. For more information on AccuView brand contact lenses, go to AccuView.com. AccuView, Healthy Vision, and Acuminder are trademarks of Johnson & Johnson Vision Care Incorporated.